Hi, this is John Stone from 10,000 Blades, and you're listening to WNHHLP 103.5 FM, streaming live at newhavenindependent.org. All the best of food and drink, a glass of wine, a smile, a wink. Don't have a cow, don't make a stink, it's Lucy in the kitchen sink.
Hey New Haveners, and welcome back to another episode of Kitchen Sink. What you're hearing today has long been to me an iconic sound of summer. Ratatouille, sizzling with garlic and oil, bubbling as tomato and wine slip in, steaming up the whole kitchen with the smell of eggplant, herbe de Provence, zucchini and peppers. Derived from an 18th century word for a motley stew, it's a glistening, just oily enough mess of bright vegetables that the Niçoise of France have long laid claim to. It's a humble food, and it didn't get a lot of love in the U.S. until well into the second half of the 20th century, when there was a sudden interest in food that didn't come from a jello mold or dead animal. You might remember this voice when you think of that moment.
Welcome to the French Chef. I'm Julia Child. Today we're going to do vegetables the French way. One of the things that most amazed and delighted me when I first went to France was they're absolutely delicious vegetables. They're so good you can serve them as a separate course.
But my muse, also an American woman, was named Molly Katzen. I first discovered ratatouille in the kitchen of my childhood, where my mom doled it out in steamy, heaping portions in a very successful attempt to get me and my brother to eat our vegetables. The recipe came from Katzen's 1977 Moosewood cookbook, a sauce-splattered, dog-eared version of which lived at arm's reach for the first 18 years of my life. Even as a kid, I thought of it as the ultimate comfort food. It was warm, with a bright balance of tomatoes and squash, basil, and just enough salt. In summer, the vegetables came from our weekly CSA, and we'd dream up recipes while walking up our little street in Michigan, shaking off the heat with the promise of what tastes were to come. In my young mind, Molly Katzen wore a golden crown of zucchini flowers and led me to independence through her recipes. When I was old enough to cook for my family, ratatouille was one of the first things I learned to make, pairing it with this grainy, whole wheat homemade cornbread that I became absurdly proud of. By high school, the Moosewood recipe lived in my head with snippets of poetry, essay formats, and botched algebra equations. It traveled with me to college, where I made it to win over roommates, delight at potlucks, and at least once to get the guy. And yes, it worked. From the year I lived in France as a Fulbright scholar, I have this memory of schlepping it across town in a recycled, piping hot yogurt container with every intention of presenting the ratatouille and proclaiming my love for him in pidgin French. It's one of the first things I made when I got to New Haven, and it's what I made in the middle of a blizzard in Maine because a friend asked for it. In other words, it's home. It's every form of home, and every home that you could ever dream of. Somewhere in there, I also saw the eponymous Pixar movie, in which a little blue rat named Remy wins us over with big, wet eyes and mad cooking skills. That's the joke, you see. A rat makes ratatouille. What he makes is actually called a confit bialdi, a kind of fancy, deconstructed ratatouille. And while I tried it, I quickly went back to what I'd always known. Until recently, at least. Today's episode revisits that recipe and its many forms again. It is an ode, humble, but I hope exuberant, to a food that still doesn't get enough respect in the U.S. And it starts with an interview with Molly Katzen herself, who I was lucky enough to connect with in July. So I wanted to talk to you because, well, this might sound awkward, but I feel like you are the patron saint of every pot of ratatouille that I've ever made.
That is so wonderful. I appreciate that. Thank you. I mean, it doesn't sound, it's lovely. Let me just say that. Appreciate it.
I know it's humble food, but it's a recipe that I sort of go back to over and over again. And so I'm wondering, first of all, do you find yourself cooking it quite often, you know, for yourself, just for fun?
You know, I love making it. It's one of my favorite things to make. It's something incredibly gratifying about the way it comes together. And I used to do it in the Moosewood Cookbook way, which is, you know, stew it all together in one pot, which is, you know, it's got some traditional roots for sure. For one thing, you know, traditional people in Provence and in Nice, where it comes from, it's not like they had a six burner stove. It's like you got it. It's not like they had a lot of different pots. It's like, here's your pot, here's your burner, or maybe two. And, you know, so that it kind of, I love the way it reflects that Moosewood cookbook version of it, which is very traditional, reflects the modesty of the kitchens of Provence, among other things. But to answer your question, I don't make it that often for myself because I focus more for my own eating, usually on the dark leafy greens, because that's what I grow. I have a big vegetable garden, and I don't have the growing season for the eggplant. But anyway, it's something I make when I'm cooking for a bunch, for a crowd. I love it. I love to make it and serve it with polenta. It's one of my favorite ways to do it. It's such a perfect meal. But lately, in the last, say, 8 to 10 years, maybe longer, I've become a real aficionado of roasting vegetables rather than stewing them on the stovetop, or of grilling them over a very high heat in a grill pan, like just smacking them down single layer, either on the grill pan, on the stove, or if the grill outside, if the coals are hot, or if the grill is hot, if it's a gas grill, and cooking them separately, and then as soon as they're cooked through, putting them all together into one bowl as they kind of cool down and express all their juices. So it kind of makes its own little stew, you know, and almost all the vegetables will do that. So one way to make ratatouille that isn't the Moosewood cookbook traditional method, but in later books I've done it this way, and I love to do it in all different kinds of ways. It's the high temperature roasting, which in and of itself imparts a lot of flavor. And then you cool them down together in a bowl covered as you would, you know, the bell peppers part of it, and then go for, you know, mixing it up and seasoning it and mingling it. And it's a lovely way to do it. It's also, I mean, you can do it. It's like, who's your favorite child? I like both methods a lot. I don't want to say one's better than the other, but it's fun to mix it up.
You know, when you said, I want to put this recipe, I want to share this recipe with people. Was the idea of tradition really, really important to you?
Yes. Yeah, it was. And still is, but differently now. Cause I used to feel very strict about wanting to respect tradition. And I didn't want to get too creative or too fusion-y with, you know, classics that really represent a place. Like, there's something about ratatouille. It is like, it is from Provence. It's from Nice. It puts you back there. It's like, I love the idea of the armchair or the dining room chair traveler. Yeah. Like, here's this dish and it can transport you to someplace, you know, from home. So the traditional part was really important to me, but not to the extent that I would have people bending over backwards to find ingredients that weren't normally, you know, accessible or available in American kitchens. And American supermarkets.
Right.
So I've always tried to tread the line between respecting tradition as much as possible and not getting too cute or too creative, but also not wanting to send people around to 10 different stores because they have to have the authentic this or that. It's finding that balance and understanding that I'm writing for home cooks who might love the idea of making something authentic, but also they need to get dinner on the table. One of the things that's evolved since I've been writing cookbooks now for over 4 decades, I started very young, and I'm not young anymore, so that adds up to a lot of decades. What's changed absolutely stunningly is what's available in the supermarkets. It's hard to picture it from your generation, but when I started writing cookbooks, and for the first chunk of time I was doing it, you couldn't find a bottle of olive oil in a regular supermarket.
Really?
It's radical. Not only that you can find olive oil, but you can find different kinds of it in from different places. It used to be just there was Wesson oil or some kind of generic oil or corn oil or quote unquote vegetable oil. Or maybe there was an olive oil that was highly processed in it from an American kind of brand. Maybe.
Yeah.
But authentic real olive oil was not even, you couldn't find that. There was no such thing really stateside as well. Red peppers. Sweet bell peppers were just green peppers. So a lot of the availability of really good produce, good ingredients, and good shelf stable things like good oils is relative. It's like only the last 20 years or so. And that means it's great for my style of writing, which, as I said, is like I want to be as authentic as possible, but with one stop shopping for busy people, that's getting more and more realistic, which is great.
Maybe this is blasphemous, I don't know, but I kind of grew up thinking it was a little bit of a kitchen sink recipe in that, I even made it earlier this week because I had these beautiful eggplant from, I do a CSA, and these beautiful yellow squash, and then I was already like chopping things up and I thought, I don't have wine and I don't have peppers. And it was like everything was closed because I keep weird hours. Uh-huh. And it was fine. Uh-huh. It wasn't the most amazing pot that I've ever made, but it was totally fine. But do you think of it sort of as a kitchen sink recipe, or do you think, well, no, otherwise it's, you know, it's stewed vegetables, but it's not ratatouille?
Here's where my thinking has kind of loosened up a little bit since I was younger and really trying hard to respect the tradition,
right,
or the traditional dish. The way I think about it now is in its place of origin, because actually ratatouille is interesting. Because it's in the Mediterranean area, different countries have their own versions of it. Like even Turkey has a version of it. Everyone has like a version of, you know, this kind of Mediterranean vegetable stew based on what they have locally, you know? And so the kitchen sink part of it would be, the projection that I make now in my current thinking is, if they had other vegetables available, or, you know, 2 inches left in their bottle of wine, which of course in Nice they never do.
Right.
But, you know, hypothetical, or if they were growing this other vegetable, or someone did give them a handful of mushrooms, or, you know, something else they could throw in there, like some winter squash in addition to the summer squash or something like that. The original people, someone just cooking in their own kitchen who's not thinking, I am, you know, Niçoise and I need to cook according to the traditions of my sense of place. It's more like, no, I'm trying to make a dish. I'm not thinking about whether this is authentically Provençal or authentically Catalonian. I'm making dinner. And if somebody hands you a certain vegetable, if it's available or it happens to be in the garden, you're not going to say, oh, that's not in the traditional dish. I'm going to leave it out. You throw it in too. So I think any locale in any given moment, there would be a kind of kitchen sink attitude towards a vegetable stew. Like, we're bring the vegetables, let's right. put them all in. And, but in Nice, these are the vegetables that there are. And so it becomes ratatouille.
Right.
Because that's what they have. And a couple of notes on this. One of them is that, say, in Turkey, they might add potatoes or okra or green beans, you
oh,
know?
Wow.
Yeah, and there's a version, there's a Greek version, and in Catalonia, they cook it way down and make it like a jam, like a vegetable jam,
oh,
which is probably,
I know,
it's like totally reduced, you know, to all this flavor. So kitchen sink, case by case, you know, so, like, you know what's the perfect example is your CSA box.
Yeah.
Like, hello, it had this, this, and this. So you made ratatouille out of what your box had in it, you know. And it's great. And you supported the farmer and you didn't have to run to the store and you had olive oil on hand, I'm sure.
I did, yeah.
So that's all really cool. So I think that I've loosened up about, oh my gosh, it has to be this and it can't be that. You know, I think I was more self-conscious about that as a young cook, but also, you know, these recipes that were in the Moosewood Cookbook in the 1970s were they were very new to Americans. This was because of the timing of it. A lot about the Moosewood Cookbook was the timing. And because of that, and because it was from very much the introduction of a lot of these dishes in an American cookbook to Americans. I mean, they were Greek, might have been a Greek cookbook or a French cookbook, although there weren't that many of any cookbooks then. It was a different marketplace. But being the sort of introducing these things for the first time, like nobody knew what hummus was. Nobody knew what tabbouleh was. And I did feel a responsibility to make it as accurate as possible. And now it's like, okay, everybody knows what it is. And if you got a different color vegetables, you know, that we didn't have before, we get to have now. And anyway, I'm going on and on, but
No. I mean, that actually is my other question. We've talked about how there was this very specific moment right around when the cookbook originally came out where people didn't know. You know, Americans didn't know. They were, I think, coming out of a period of eating TV dinners. I remember my mom ate something called Skid Row.
I have no idea what that is.
Her mother called Skid Row, but there were cornflakes involved. So
that's the best sentence ever.
So it feels like there's a very specific thing that this cookbook speaks to. And so I'm wondering, you know, how you feel like it has grown and maybe you've grown with it.
I can't separate my own growth from the growth all around me of awareness of good food and the openness to cooking as craft, as mm-hmm. well as a pragmatic thing that we have to do because it's part of life, and the absolute blossoming of all of the produce and ingredients. And I mean, all of these things just expanding around. I had some influence when I was young, but I've also been influenced greatly by how all of this has expanded. I also have mixed feelings about it, sort of. I mean, my mixed feelings consist of, you know, the kind of, how should I say, you know, it's a little bit of a pang to realize that all cooking until very recently used to be local.
Mm.
And it was sort of like everybody's repertoire was limited and pretty modest because it was all based on what actually grew within, I don't know, 100-mile, 50-mile radius. And that then it became a thing. Oh, local is a thing. You know, it's like a quality or a halo that you can use to describe a food. But it used to just plain be the reality, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Everything was local and it wasn't a thing. It's just that's because food wasn't shipped in the way it's shipped now, and it wasn't shipped great distances the way it is now. And so on the one hand, I love the purity of that original model of just we all live in a certain, we have a sense of place, and we deal with our lives based on the resources of our place.
Mm.
And that's something very beautiful and essential and authentic about that. On the other hand, it's really fantastic that stuff gets shipped all over, because then we get the olive oil from Greece and we get the, you know, on the other hand, I'm not unaware of, I feel a little odd when I'm buying produce from the Southern Hemisphere with their opposite winter and summer. So I can buy their summer produce in the winter here. And it's been shipped many, many miles. And then there's all the stigma of, you know, carbon footprint and stuff.
Oh, absolutely.
So it's a mixed bag. That. It's a very mixed bag. It's like, yes and no. I would say personally for me, what has stuck with me since I'm not a vegetarian. I was never a dogmatic vegetarian or a philosophical vegetarian. I was a default kind of plant food lover. And I still am, and I always still want my plate to be like 90% plants, maybe even 95% plants. But so it's not, it originally it was a, it, it, there was a, but the whole, one of the goals was to give people options in case they don't want meat. And there were a lot of reasons why people were starting to, you know, question meat.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them were very good reasons too. And I shared a lot of them. But now my orientation has shifted away from anything but meat, which sadly vegetarianism largely was for a lot of people. Just put something on my plate that's not meat and I'll be good, you know. I didn't see that as a pro-vegetable approach. It's like, I love vegetables. By the time I'm done putting the vegetables I want on my plate, there's almost no room for anything else, right. which is actually how I am now. But I'm not about, oh, the meat is bad, or someone who eats meat is bad, or it shouldn't be this, or it should be that, or I'm going to look for alternative sources of protein. I don't get into that very much. I just want a lot of vegetables on my plate. And so I think early on, I was trying to address people's desire to have options that didn't have a big hunk of meat at the center of the dinner. And so there were a lot of casseroles and a lot of grain-based things. And it wasn't as vegetable-oriented as it was, let's make a nice little entree that will satisfy people and they won't miss the meat. But now it's much more for me about vegetable dishes, which is why I'm so happy you wanted to talk, for example, about ratatouille. It's like this pure and wonderful and timeless vegetable dish. And it's the vegetable dish for the ages.
And I think of it, I mean, I knew growing up, it was always like a comfort food.
It is.
It was one of the first recipes that I cooked as a kid.
When I work with children, I like to give them softer vegetables to cut, right, because then they can use it. They can even use a dinner knife that has a little serration on it, mm-hmm, or something, and on a plate, and it's not the heavy duty thing of like trying to cut a carrot or something.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you mentioned, you know, all of these recipes sort of laying around you, and I have a great image of you at a kitchen table or a dining room table in California with just a plethora of ratatouille recipes. So
you're right. Actually, I have them on my dining room table. I've laid them out before calling you.
So I would love to hear about some of the favorites that you have around, sort of surrounding you right now.
Okay. Well, I looked at my own recipes first because I wanted to be sure that I remembered what I did. You know, there was a time when I knew all my recipes, sort of, if not by heart, I just basically knew, you know, what was in them, and
right,
that time has passed. I have the Moosewood cookbook and a vegetable dish book called The Vegetable Dishes I Can't Live Without that I published about 10 years ago. But there's one more that's actually my kind of current favorite. And I made something like this the other night. I had a potluck with my friends. We do the potluck often. All my friends are such good cooks. It's really great. It's so much fun. And that is my version of ratatouille that's in the book I published a couple years ago called The Heart of the Plate. I feel like it's kind of where my cooking kind of ended up after all the years. And in that is kind of a ratatouille salad. Call me crazy. But because I was really enjoying doing the vegetables in a grill pan on the stove, because I was too lazy to actually go out and I didn't want to make a whole, you know, I don't, my grill is actually one of those old fashioned hybrid grills that it's charcoal.
Mm-hmm.
So I use a grill pan often on the stove, one with ridges, and get it really, really hot. And you can get that kind of grilled effect, that singed effect, if you're not afraid of the heat, you know, just keep the heat really high. And so I was grilling zucchini and eggplant and peppers.
Oh, that sounds so good.
It was so good. And I just decided that I wanted to, after I took them off the grill pan, I wanted a landing strip of a marinade. Just, you know, because they're still hot and they're very porous. They're very permeable and they'll absorb a nice marinade. So garlic and shallots and vinegar and just a regular red wine vinegar and good olive oil and so little pinches of thyme and oregano. And so I had that in a shallow dish. And as the ratatouille vegetables were coming off the grill pan, they went straight, still very hot, went straight into the kind of, for lack of a better word, salad dressing, and which I had prepared ahead of time. So it was waiting for them. And they rest in that marinade for, you know, at least a half an hour, maybe a little longer, and absorb. And then you can serve it colder at room temperature. And you can put, if you're doing this in the summer, which you should be, it's perfect. If you get those heartbreaking, sweet little sun gold tomatoes, and instead of cooking them in like you would in a traditional ratatouille, just cut them in half and throw them on top right before you serve. And you can make olive oil toast to go with it. If I've got bread that's a day or two old and it's not really stale, but it's not the freshest thing, I brush it with olive oil and grill that and serve hot grilled olive oil grilled bread. Okay. And what you can do is you can grill the bread on the grill pan after the vegetables have come off of it. So the vegetables are in the marinade and they're soaking it up and getting all absorbed with flavor. And then just before you serve, you do the toast on that same grill pan without cleaning it. You dirty pan is one of my favorite seasonings. And so you serve it with the grilled bread to sort of sop it up. And it's a really nice summer dinner. So that's a version of a ratatouille that I have open on a book right next to me right now. And if you make a really thick polenta, like super, super stiff, and then slice it, you can grill the polenta slices so that they're really crunchy on the outside in the grill pan. It might crumble a little bit, but hey, who's going to argue about, you know, polenta crumbles? Just put it right on top of the dish. So you can serve it with the olive oil grilled toast or with grilled polenta and for a summer supper.
It sounds a bit like you sort of vary the recipes, you rotate them, I should say.
Yeah, the different ratatouille recipes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you just really want to throw everything into a pot the traditional way. Right? Don't you sometimes just want to do that?
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
It also depends on the vegetables. Like, sometimes I just look at a vegetable and I feel like, okay, this one wants to be roasted. This one wants to be grilled. It's just you get an intuitive sense of the physicality of the vegetable, and it kind of helps dictate. Like in the winter, stewing stuff is kind of nice. The roasting is more for the fall. It's also about the season. And then do you want to serve it with spaghetti? Because if you do that kind of, if you cook it down as a stew and it's got all those juices.
Oh yeah,
it's a beautiful, it's a perfect spaghetti sauce. And then you serve it with spaghetti and put toasted pine nuts on top.
Right? I know exactly what I'm going to do after this interview. So actually, my last question is just, you know, if you had to throw out words to describe ratatouille, what would they be? Or a memory to go with them?
Well, the first thing that comes to my mind with ratatouille isn't the eggplant, it's the zucchini. Zucchini is nobody's favorite vegetable ever. If you find somebody for whom it's their favorite, let me know, but I doubt you will. But there's something about the way it comes alive in ratatouille that makes me, it's like, to me, it's the star. There's something that happens to the texture of a zucchini chunk or slice. So my first word, the first phrase that comes to mind is zucchini appreciation. It's like, this is zucchini's 15 minutes here. It's, you know, so that comes to mind. And simplicity, just basic simplicity. It's an honest dish. And the authenticity of the dish is for a very good reason. It's just so, it just works so well. It just totally works. So it's the best advertisement for an authentic method.
Yeah. So I guess it's a follow-up question on my last question, but do you find people asking you about the differences between sort of the sexy ratatouille that's probably best known after being in the movie, or the stew, this kind of hearty, warming, comforting stew?
I feel sympathetic, you know, because it depends on what you're set up for in your mind.
Yeah.
You know, if you're coming in from a day of snowshoeing in a really cold winter day, you're not going to have that reaction.
Right, exactly.
You get more basic. It's like you just ladle that stew out into the bowl and it's perfect. But if you're kind of having a dinner party and some, you know, you kind of want to feel a little more elegant, and you definitely have it with, you know, a crisp rosé, I can see the movie version of it. I have not had that reaction myself. But that's also because I never make it the same way twice. Like I really do rotate my three different versions, the oven version, the moose wood stewed version, and then this grilled one that ends up in marinade, which by the way, I have to say, just when I made it for my friends the other night, I had been to the produce market that morning and could not resist a couple of ears of extremely sweet, fresh corn and a big bunch of basil. I shaved raw corn onto the grill pan after I was finished grilling all the vegetables for the marinated version. I deglazed the pan with corn. So I didn't really cook it, but I kind of let it pick up all the herbs because I had herbs on the pan, some thyme and marjoram. And so I added corn, and then I topped with a generous thick chiffonade of basil. And again, with the sun gold tomatoes, and that were uncooked, they were just thrown in. And I loved that version a lot. And I'm just wondering if that version might not have spoken to the people whose expectation was created by the movie. But on the other hand, you know, I'm sure there are people who think that the dish was named after the movie too. So.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
Which makes me want to shoot myself, but hey, it's modern life.
Right. I know. That's, yeah, a whole other conversation. Well, I mean, that's about it for me, but I want to thank you so much for your time.
Oh, it was really fun talking to you, Lucy.
My mind is still swimming from that interview, not unlike those roasted vegetables and their juices. But while I got the living, breathing Molly Katzen, I ultimately wanted to include another chef. This guy.
I have got to teach you about food. Close your eyes. Now, take a bite of this.
No! No! No!
Don't just
hork it down!
Too late.
Here. Chew it slowly. Mm. Only think about the taste. See?
Not really.
Creamy, salty, sweet, and oaky nuttiness. You detect that?
Oh, I'm detecting nuttiness.
Close your eyes. Now taste this. Whole different thing, right? Sweet, crisp, slight tang on the finish.
Okay.
Now try them together.
Okay. I think I'm getting a little something there. It might be the nuttiness.
See?
Could be the tang.
That's it. Now, imagine every great taste in the world being combined into infinite combinations. Tastes that no one has tried yet. Discoveries to be made.
I think. You lost me again.
Yeah.
But that was interesting.
That's our friend Remy the Rat, trying to teach his brother Emil about food. Remy, who spends the majority of Ratatouille talking to a great culinary ghost. Remy, who has filled our rodent-hating hearts by the end of the movie. The more I learned about the movie, the more I realized that it hadn't gotten its due when it was released in 2007. So I sat down with Deep Focus host and film critic Tom Breen to discuss.
I mean, so this movie came out in 2007, which was kind of the peak or nearing the peak of Pixar's kind of dominance of early 21st century animation with movies like Up, Finding Nemo, The Incredibles, Cars. And I think Ratatouille fits very well within this model that they've set up of very like emotionally affecting, emotionally satisfying narratives with characters and character arcs that both adults and kids can really respond to. Ratatouille is a very funny movie. I love how, so it's about a rat who lives in Paris who has a penchant for haute cuisine and aspires to be this great gourmet chef. And the way that he is able to realize that dream, compromised the kitchen may be, is that he finds himself in the hat, kind of above the head, of an aspiring cook himself. So he kind of tugs at the hair of this cook who is trying to learn how to, you know, cook these great, very impressive French dishes, but also who's trying to impress the female cook who works alongside him. I found Remy, the character himself, I thought is one of Pixar's strongest. Maybe the reason why Ratatouille does not get as much love as some of the other Pixar flicks. I think that the secondary characters, while really interesting and fun, do not have the same kind of emotional connection to either Remy or to the audiences as he does. Or as if you think about Finding Nemo, you have both the dad and Dory and Nemo himself. I mean, there, I feel like there's so many kind of players who the audience is always interested in watching. I feel like with Remy, because the story of Remy is so much about an individual kind of breaking off from the group and defining himself as independently creative from the people who surround him, maybe the like individualism of it is something that makes the secondary stories a bit less interesting to follow. Although I really found the whole thing delightful. You know, Ratatouille is as much about food preparation as it is about food. So much of food movies, we spend kind of salivating over these beautiful, colorful dishes that are presented kind of to the viewer to whet the appetite. Here, I feel like food is more of a vehicle for demonstrating like creative proficiency at creating something. But this, you know, this may show a bit of my soup prejudice, so I apologize if that's supposed to come out. But aesthetically, soup is not the most interesting thing to look at. It's quite deliberate that for most of this movie, Remy and Linguini, his human partner, are not making these aesthetically ornate dishes. Rather, they're making this really tasty soup. And what soup does demand is a lot of attention to all of the different ingredients that go in, like very careful preparation and kind of meticulous attention to detail. I feel like not until the ratatouille at the very end are we presented with something that is like this final dish that is meant to inspire and awe us in and of itself. It's always about the preparation for me and all of the training. It's like this movie is like a movie of training montages, right? This movie is also very much about food criticism and arts criticism. And as I was, there's the chief antagonist is a figure named Anton Ego, and he literally kills someone with one of his reviews. He gives him a bad enough review, his restaurant a bad enough review that Gusteau loses a star in his restaurant and then has a heart attack soon after. And the climax of the movie, even though most of the movie follows the kind of romantic relationship between Linguini and Colette, and also the way that Remy's learning how to cook, the climax is this kind of battle between Remy's kitchen and Anton Ego's pen. It also works really well with Ratatouille being, I don't know if this is true or not, but in the movie it's presented as a dish of humble origins that is capable of delivering a surprising, like, emotional effect in addition to gustatorial. I think that this movie has one of those gives you chills moments, one of those very rare moments when you're at the movies and you see a scene and all of a sudden you just start, like, shivering because you realize just how true and how beautiful something is. This is when Anton Ego first tastes the ratatouille created by Remy, and this is a man who has become so kind of bitter in his resolve to hate everything produced at this restaurant. And really, he uses food and food writing as a weapon. It's not something of joy anymore. And he takes a bite of the food, and it's not that he loves it. It's that all of a sudden he is literally transported back to his childhood with him as a boy shivering in the rain and cold, and his mom bringing him into his house and making him a dish of ratatouille. And at that moment, you realize that food is not just a matter of sustenance. It's a matter of love, and the way that ratatouille for him embodies this love delivered from his mother to him as a very young child, you know, is a certain affection and innocence that he's lost over his years as a kind of grizzled old restaurant critic. I found really beautiful.
This episode of Kitchen Sink was produced by me, Lucy Gelman, with music from John Stone and Dana Boulay. Special thanks to Molly Katzen and Tom Breen for their time. If you have questions or comments about this episode or any episode of Kitchen Sink, find us on iTunes, Facebook, or SoundCloud at WNHH Community Radio and leave a comment there. Kitchen Sink is also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And if you leave a comment there, it helps me figure out what I'm doing right and what I could be doing better. Thanks for listening. And as always, happy eating.